Carolyn Lydon digs into Flock, Zero Click, and marketing automation. See, we pissed off everyone on this one, but we're redeeming ourselves. We're actually unpacking a discussion about women in SEO today on the air. Go!
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests.
Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics.
This week's featured guest is Carolyn Lydon, Director of Search Content for Search Engine Land and SMX. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
This is Edge of the Web Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. Every week, we bring you amazing guests to chat with about digital marketing tactics and news. We unpack a key marketing topic for our digital marketing audience. Whether you're a part of an agency or a freelancer or part of a firm, this show is for you. Be sure to check out all our recent shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com. Edge of the Web is actually sponsored by your title sponsor, Site Strategic. So we're pioneers in the agile digital marketing methodology. Our core specialties are SEO, SEM, technical SEO, and conversion rate optimization, along with omni-channel media broadcast, just like what you're hearing and watching today. Agile marketing, results-based marketing that actually works. If you're interested in what we can do for you, just give us a call at 877-SEO for web or 877-736-4932. Just want to let you know a few things, some housekeeping of Edge. Who's going to be coming up on this show? In the next few episodes, we're going to be talking to Roger Monty over at Search Engine Journal and Mark Traphagen. Be sure to check out the recent shows that we've had, Ashley Segura and Andrew Optimizey, as well as check out our 404th show. Yeah, we did 404 shows, and we actually had a contest giving away a really cool podcasting kit to the best submitter of a top-level 404 page on the net. So we had a lot of fun. Check that out. If you're interested in being part of the show, just let us know at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. Set your reminders on YouTube and get notified when we post these videos. Make sure that you check out our weekly news podcast covering the most recent digital marketing news and Google updates. We're dropping it every Tuesday to help you navigate your digital marketing week. We're continuing our news with Morty Oberstein, the indomitable Morty Oberstein, so you never know what he's going to actually say, so you might want to tune in there. Now, let's continue our conversation with Carolyn Lydon. If you didn't check out our first episode, she's the director of search content at Third Door Media. She most recently ran her own agency, Search Hermit, where she specifically set out to help women and BIPOC-owned businesses improve their presence and performance in search. She's extremely knowledgeable across all verticals in search marketing, with particular expertise in content marketing strategy, local search marketing, and analytics. She's also a well-known figure in the search community through her experiences speaking in various search conferences, and as a leader of popular chats on Twitter, hashtag SEO chat in particular. And every once in a while, a rogue Morty Oberstein jumps in there, and Alan Blyweiss. Carolyn truly is the matriarch there, so we want to make sure that we clean house away from those rogues every once in a while, right? Carolyn, thanks so much again for joining us on our second segment here. Some good knowledge about how Third Door operates its content and how Search Engine Land and Marketing Land deliver content on a daily basis for us in the SEO and digital marketing industry, as well as we talked about some of the challenges that Third Door had with their at-person conferences getting shut down in 2020. I would like to pivot around because you are the editor-in-chief, and let's talk about SEO topics here for a second, because there's so much in the water right now. It's never a dull moment inside of SEO, never a dull moment in the spaces of even big data in politics. We're not going to do big data in politics today, but just saying, there's constant tumult in the water. All right, so some topics in SEO. FLOC. What the heck is this thing? I know what it stands for. Federated Learning of Cohort. Give me your take, a boilerplate for our audience that may not have come across this yet. What is FLOC?
Yeah, so I'm just calling it Flock, which is great for the...
There's so many acronyms there that we can use.
Oh, yeah. And it's part of, I think, Google's, all the acronyms around it are related to like birds and things like that, which is super interesting too. Turtle dove and fledge and stuff like that. But Flock, like you said, is Federated Learning of Cohorts. And it's essentially Google's replacement for third-party cookies. So they're phasing out third-party cookies so that they say to protect the privacy of users. And the idea is that Google will group users essentially into buckets based on your interests.
Right.
And targeting will be based on those interest buckets from now on, as opposed to the cookie-based targeting that we were using as advertisers before and that users were oftentimes unknowingly participating in. I don't think a lot of times consumers understand how the data and privacy aspect of search and ads work. I think this has also given users a glimpse into what's going on behind the scenes a little bit, even if they may not understand the minutia of it.
There's a lot of debate about this. And we know that the privacy challenges with third-party cookies have been there for the longest time. It's great. It's good to actually slough off that in favor of a new way to track users. However, there is a solid camp anti-flock or deflocking, as the case may be. How about that? See, it's going to be the gift that keeps on giving. The approach effectively hides individuals in the crowd and uses on-device processing to keep the person's web history private on the browser. Google Ads team have tested this privacy-first type of alternative for third-party cookies. They're trying to create this replacement, but it's a new way to make your browser do the profiling that third-party trackers used to do themselves, right? In this case, in boiling down your recent browser activity into a behavioral label and then sharing that with websites and advertisers. So you're kind of getting distilled and democratized as opposed to opting in. Now we had a lot of conversation on the show here about opt-in tracking, right? Just let us opt into the sites that we want to be tracked. And at that point in time, you're in full control of all the advertising that's coming your way. And on top of that, you could be even in full control of where that advertising information goes, right, into the ecosystem. But to be kind of part of a learning cohort and have a labeling or a series of more detailed labels assigned to my behavior, they may very well not know my history of my browser, but they certainly are going to put me into a category that I don't particularly want to be in and see the ads come at me from that particular label. See where I'm going there? Well, there's kind of two choices at mix here is the route of an opt-in scenario and then being kind of labeled. And we have no control over how that label data actually gets moved to different advertising third parties. So there's a lot of contention about this. What have you guys written about that clears the air or actually assists in, and I wouldn't say feeding the argument, but actually clearly creating the lanes of understanding?
Yeah. So sort of to touch on what you were saying before regarding opting in, like giving the choice to opt in, right. I feel like not all of it, but a decent amount of the news and opinion that's coming out seems to compare Google's federated learning of cohorts to Apple's IDFA. So in Apple's latest iOS update, they're giving people essentially the option to be tracked across apps, which also affects marketers, but it puts the onus on the user to choose whether or not they participate in that tracking and the giving up of their data. So I think that there are potentially case studies out there that we can see how this goes. And there has been data around how many people actually would choose to opt in. And I think last year, I think it was around 60% of people said they would. I read a study recently that said it was more recently around 40% of people. Mm-hmm. And I think with Apple's IDFA also, you only get like two lines to explain why you want to track someone. So that may be a harder, that may be why that percentage has dropped. But yeah, the coverage around Flock, I feel like, is part of this more zoomed out look at data privacy and why it matters for search marketers. We obviously are used to third-party cookies that we get, even in the tools that we were using previously. It makes me think of, y'all remember Nacho Analytics, which was supposed to help people
spy on analytics of different companies that you don't have access to.
Right. And I think that was tracking people without their knowledge. Yep. And using that data for their SaaS purposes. So I think there is a larger conversation that Flock and Apple's IDFA, and even now Facebook with their leak of user data, that people have less trust in these tech companies. I think Axios did some data, released some data on it, but people have less trust in these big tech companies. And thinking about what does that mean for marketers if these are the main ways that we're reaching people in search marketing, if we're targeting people on Facebook, if we're targeting with search ads. And so that there's that part of the conversation, but then the part of the conversation is, if Google is moving forward with these, and then other browsers are also getting rid of third party cookies. How are we adjusting? How do we need to adjust? Do we need to adjust at all? Google says, I think that according to their testing, which they opened Flock up for advertiser testing at the beginning of Q2. Mm-hmm. But according to their own internal testing, it was like 95%. I don't want to say accurate. I don't know the exact word, but it was like 90% on par with the existing tracking. So I think marketers are, like I said earlier or in the last episode, we're always evolving. We always have to deal with change. And so part of it is figuring out how we're going to deal with this and if it changes anything for us, and then how we can adjust. And then there's a communication aspect of it as well. So how do you communicate this if you're agency side to your clients, or if you're in-house to the stakeholders, mm-hmm. to see like, this is why we're changing. These are the effects it's going to have. This is maybe there's an evening out period where we got to figure it out.
Right.
So I think there's that zoomed out view of what's really happening across the landscapes for these tech companies and how we have to adjust.
And it's beyond marketing, obviously. It's society as a whole. I mean, 533 million Facebook users, accounts were leaked, including names, phone numbers, Facebook IDs, locations, birthdays, relationship status. I mean, this is serious, serious stuff. And people are going to, as much as we did talk about how convenient personalized ads are in search and how consumers thoroughly enjoy the personalized content and advertising that comes with a price, and people are more and more understanding what that price is, and they're pushing away from the table. They're not wanting to have those type of conveniences at risk of their personal identity being stolen or exploited. So we're going to be in this space where I mean, I'm not a prognosticator. All I can do is kind of tee up the facts as we see them and have discussions about them, right? It's great to be able to see this incubation of a new way to track without tracking, depersonalizing behavior. But at the same time, if you get yourself labeled to a degree of labeling, you can only imagine that the only way to be effectively marketing, you got to have such nuance and granularity into the labeling itself that by and large, you're still getting the same result and you're still as potentially susceptible of privacy exploits. Even though they don't know your name, they could truly pinpoint you on geo-targeting and all the other behavioral characteristics. Not to put on my tinfoil hat or go evil genius on us. I lean more towards opt-in. If I want the data, if I want that type of advertising, let me choose as a private consumer to be able to accept that. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. I think also on the search marketer side, at least a lot of the feedback that I've heard is a lot of people in advertising and PPC sort of feel like, is Google getting to decide that they're the arbiter of yes. privacy and data? And there's lots of talk of the walled garden and Google's the one who holds mm-hmm. the black box of data. And what does that mean? Google obviously has pushed back on that,
right.
which we've made sure to try to cover in our reporting of the situation as well. So I think because there is this constant, I guess, back and forth between Google as a tech company and a search engine, and then search marketers, PPC advertisers, that there might be some distrust back and forth between the two. And so making sure that, I guess, there's as much clarification as possible. But I think that that's also a big, I guess, topic in the search community.
Absolutely.
That's why it's a topic of conversation.
Speaking of trust, here's a great segue into our next point here. What the heck are you doing with our search content, Google? 65% of searches in 2020 resulted in zero click. All right. So we covered this topic this last week, I think. But there's a whole other subject matter right here of website owners and marketers getting all a flutter because the searches that are happening all of last year and continue this year are not resulting in a click going to a website destination. So on the surface, you'd think that, well, Google's slurping up all the content to be able to populate feature snippets and this, that, and the other. But that's not really the case. We as consumers are asking more of our smart speakers, our search environment. We're looking for that transactional data that has no destination. What time is it? What's the weather? My directions to the airport. I don't need a destination. I don't need a website to see. And I'm trusting more and more into Google to because of the tech company, they're providing me this omnipresent answer cube, right? To be able to go to Google and just say, all right, this is what I want, need to know. So our consumer behavior, just like we were talking about for this last subject matter, right? Our consumer behavior is changing. Why are people so up in arms regarding zero click?
I think honestly, as with most things like the Flock thing, it's less about what's actually being said and more about the, I'm trying to phrase this as like PC as possible, but it's more about this push and pull, I think, with Google that a lot of search marketers have, sort of related to the Flock thing.
Yep.
So we get data from Rand and SimilarWeb, and we say, okay, Google, is this true? And Google says, no, but we're not going to provide you with data to necessarily refute it. And so I think there's a frustration there that people don't necessarily maybe hate that that this truth exists, or, you know, I even think that maybe the 65% is a large number because, of course, we're including things like you were saying, like we're searching for what's the temperature outside and what time is it in Pacific time. I search that all the time.
All the time, yeah, absolutely.
I have time zone issues. But I think it's more about this push and pull between search marketers and Google. So it's less about the actual numbers and more about, I like to tell people, it's like we wouldn't exist without Google, but also Google wouldn't exist without us giving our,
that's right,
at least as a search engine, giving our websites for them to rank and serve in contents.
And the slippery slope is we're giving our websites content up to Google, and Google is also deciding to lift it into featured snippets. And then there's the other contention of, oh, okay, if you're actually showcasing the answer, then there's no reason to actually go to my website. Who gave you that permission? And then on top of it, the last more recent news is all of a sudden competitors are actually getting inserted into the knowledge panel of your own brand. What the Flock is that?
So I think again, this is especially on this, maybe on the more on the SEO side, in theory on the PPC side, I'm sure search marketers will disagree, but Google's goal is to serve the user. And if we want, Google makes a ton of money by advertising. So if it continues to keep you on its search engine, you are more likely to click an ad and they were more likely to make money from you. And that's just how business works. That's how it works across multiple domains, even aside from search engines. So their goal is to serve the user. And as users, like you were saying, I don't want to print out my MapQuest directions anymore. Like I just want someone to tell me how to get there. And a lot of the chatter I think I've been seeing in the SEO community, once people got over the number of zero click searches that was published, a lot of people were actually saying like, okay, yeah, this is what it is. Right. And it makes sense because we're trying to serve the users as well. We're trying to answer questions as best as possible. And instead of focusing on what Google gives and what Google takes away, we really need to think about, like, take Google out of it and think about, what does your user want? What does your target audience want? And if they want the map, they're going to get the map. If they want the degrees outside, they're going to get that instead. And if they want a long form explainer, that is what is going to get served up too. So creating that content for where it exists. And one thing I tell people, I think people forget, when you do keyword research, we get so caught up in the tools. We're checking the rankings. We're checking the keyword difficulty. We're checking how many links. Nobody actually Googles it. Just Google it and see what comes up. Like, is it a map? Is it shopping? Is it a YouTube video? Is it an infographic?
Understand the intent. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Google, that's what Google is serving. So like create that if that's what you want to rank for that specific keyword. Do the best version of that because that's what Google is assuming people want when they're searching for that specific
keyword. All the arguments encompass a fiction about control. The users evolve. And what we could hold on to for click-through rates 10 years ago, it's nothing like that now. And on top of that, the entire utilitarian aspect of the functions of Google have changed. The new media audience perspective has changed. So you can't have anything. There's nothing constant. There's no guarantee of anything constant in life to begin with. Why in the world do you think that your click ratio on Google search is going to stay the same? Come on. Plus, we were just put into a wormhole for a year. You better believe there's going to be a heck of a lot more activity on search that won't result into a transaction on your own bloody website. Okay.
Yeah.
That was a rant there.
You feel better now?
I do. I really do. Thank you.
Good.
All right. Hey, let's jettison some of those topics. I do appreciate your contribution there, because that's the kind of stuff that riles everybody's cages, and it's unending. It truly is unending. I think there's sometimes just the want to bitch and complain is actually stronger than resolving yourself to actually make a better website, you know? There's also that out there. But let's pivot around to a survey that Moz ran back in 2020 to kind of finish out our interview here. They ran a survey with 652 SEOs who participated in the survey. 191 identified as women and 466 identified as men. Men outnumbered women by 2-1 in this SEO survey. And there's a number of key elements just recently that they brought through. Female identifying SEOs are more likely to freelance and specialize in content. Let's back up for a second here. The fact of the matter, what's your take on females in SEO and the discrepancy therein?
Yeah, I think, I'm part of the Women in Tech SEO community. Shout out to Arij for starting that.
Yeah.
And also a part of a bunch of different Facebook groups, even just for like women digital marketers. And I think a lot of people, when they started SEO, you know, like back in the day, 10 or 15 years ago, many people at least evolved from a developer or database or something very technical, that oftentimes it was men in those industries, not because women weren't interested, but because they were essentially like closed out. It was oftentimes a bro club. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think the idea that women getting into SEO through content is super interesting. And it seems like obviously it's my personal story too, so it checks out for me, but I know so many super smart, super amazing women on the technical side who, I mean, frankly, they get not shunned, but when they come out with things, there are men who are like, oh, I know more about this topic than you, or yeah, you didn't cover this, or XYZ, and that sort of thing. So I think sometimes women are less likely to want to put it out there because they don't want to have to deal sometimes with the backlash that comes from some, and it's not everyone, obviously, but sometimes women are like, I'm just freelancing, I'm doing this on the side. I don't have to be a vocal member of the SEO community, or if they are, they're part of like women-only SEO communities where they don't necessarily receive that negative potential feedback. But I do think that hopefully we're moving toward more equitable balance in terms of SEO. And I hope that the next survey they do reflects that. And I think mentorship is a super big part of that. Women in Tech SEO had a mentorship program. And I know a couple of different entities are also doing like speaker mentorship programs, just so that different SEOs can come out of their shells and be more vocal and be more present in the community and speak at events and things like that too. So there's more visibility there as well. That was just a long rant.
No.
I know that's not 100% true across the board. I know that there are definitely women in tech SEO, that there are outspoken women in it as well. So I know that's not 100% the case, but
sure. And I appreciate the rant because it kind of sets up the conversation. I wanted to pinpoint on one particular area that you covered there, and it's this level of SEO scrutiny. Have you seen it being used thinly veiled? There's also a heck of a lot of pettiness out there, and there's a heck of a lot of judgment out there that is thinly veiled with scrutiny on the technical analysis that you're doing. But have you seen that type of attack as thinly veiled bias against women in tech, SEO?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember a couple years ago, Brittany Muller was speaking at an event, and I don't remember exactly what it's about, but she's been obviously a leader in talking about automation. Even a couple of years ago, she gave a talk at MozCon that it was one of those aha moments that I mentioned in the last episode where I was like, I'm going to go implement this immediately.
Yeah.
But an event she was speaking at posted really just like a thing about a session she had coming up. So the live event hadn't even happened. And there were a bunch of big name men in the SEO community who were like, well, it doesn't cover this and she doesn't talk about that. And I went into the Twitter mentions. Yeah. And I was like, this event hasn't even happened. You haven't even seen it. Wow. You don't even know what she's covering. You're just coming into, well, actually, like, have you thought about this? And mm-hmm. have you done that? Wow. I actually deleted Twitter off my phone after that because I was like, I don't need this vitriol. Oh, that's people telling me that I'm a bad person for this as well. But yeah, I think to your point, there is almost a level of elitism that can happen in the SEO community. I know it varies for different people. Some people think all these like big name people who are in the SEO community aren't actually doing SEO.
Right.
If you're on Twitter talking about it, then you're not doing about it. And I honestly think that at the very basic level, I try to think of everyone like, if you were a child, what's going on with you right now? Like, where are you hurting that you have to hurt other people this way? Like, you obviously have some, not you, but whoever's responding obviously has some sort of like right. insecurities, or you know, like only hurt people. So like, what's happening in your life right now?
You just need a big hug, don't you? Yeah.
Or like maybe a timeout by yourself to like think things through. But I mean, that's how I try to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm not naturally an empathetic person, so that helps me. But I think that's sort of where it stems from, is maybe people have their own imposter syndrome and they yep. sort of, you feel better when you're trying to like take other people down. So to the community, I would say like, you don't have to take other people down to make yourself bigger. We're not taking slices of the pie away from people. We can just bake a bigger pie and everyone can be part of the picnic.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's definitely an element of it. And I hope it diminishes. More women are in those big name positions in like speaking and keynoting and running huge experiments and writing articles for large publications and things like that too.
You know what? Life's too short for this. If you're actually coming out with experiments and coming out with just positing a thought, let's talk about it as a group, right? Yeah. SEO should be the community that welcomes the scientifically minded, especially if you're having people come in from the creative, more Vision Quest side, and they're wanting to embrace the analytics, the actual methodology of testing and coding. Why in the world would you be up in arms and try to close ranks? I mean, it doesn't make any bloody sense. You're wanting to have this type of experimental marketing mindset. That's the convergence of what marketing and analytics gave us, is the ability to test things, right? You shouldn't have to have a degree in analytical science to actually posit a thought, and you should not have to defend every nook and cranny of something that you're bringing to the table to discuss. Well, that said, there's a number of key points that are from that survey in 20, and we certainly would like to see Moz do that again and see how 2020 has come through in 2021 to be able to see a shift in the data there, pun intended. You know, female identifying SEOs generally charged less than men for their services. You know, a group of women in SEO that we want to give a shout out to, that's Jill Whalen, Annie Cushings, Anne Smarty, Lily Ray, Alita Solis. She's been fantastic in the space. Susan Winograd, a number of friends of the show here. They're stellar in what they do, and they put forth such great forum discussions as well. And see, that demonstrates the welcoming in as opposed to shuttering the board and creating a boys only club, right? Keep on thinking about spanking and alfalfa. No girls allowed. What the hell is that? You know,
I don't remember what the I don't remember the little girl's name, but Darla. She had a thing. Yeah, Darla, when she's the anti-boys club or whatever.
Yep.
But to your point about people not charging enough, that's one reason I think. If you want to be a good ally to a woman in SEO or in search marketing, one way to do that is to just tell people how much you make for your job.
There you go.
If you have equivalent people if you're in PPC and you have an equivalent search marketer talking about salary transparency is super important in this space. I speak frequently about how to negotiate your salary. It's something I'm super passionate about. And I always try to make sure that I'm targeting that talk toward women audiences, because I think a lot of times, I mean, data shows that when women ask for salary increases for our employees or people in our departments, we're seen as charitable and we're seen as giving, we're seen as nurturing. But when we ask for salary increases for ourselves, we're often seen as greedy. It's considered this double bind. So making sure that you're supporting women in your department, women in your agency, to make sure that they're getting paid the same as you. And it goes back to the other pie thing, like just because someone else is getting paid equal to you for equal work doesn't take away from your salary. It doesn't take less or take money away from you. So that's one way to be a super great ally. And it's an uncomfortable conversation because people associate their self-worth with how much they make. But if you want to help the women around you, that's one way to do it, is to open up conversation and talk about how much you make. And I think that's one thing that I really like about the women in tech SEO community too, is women often go to these freelancing positions, especially now with COVID, because the, along with the work, the housework, the domestic work also often falls to women. So they end up taking part-time jobs or freelance jobs or becoming their own consultants because they can set their own hours. But sometimes that also means that they're underpricing themselves. So talking about how much you charge for an audit or any other SEO work you do, how much you charge for local SEO on a monthly retainer basis, what that includes, opening those conversations up, like what happens in the women in tech SEO community, can really help, sort of like the rising tide raises all boats, making sure everyone gets paid for what they're worth. I really love that community. As you can tell, I have no like stakes in it, but it's what Arish has started, I think, has been super helpful for so many people. Fantastic. Even in just empowering women to have these conversations, because it, like I said, it seems scary sometimes. So,
well, we certainly champion what you're doing and keep that torch going. And if there's anything that we can do to be able to help the cause, we certainly want to do that as well. Carolyn, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. What would you give as a great pro tip to share with our audience today?
Oh man, I think I like my keyword research pro tip, and then my also pro tip to share your salary information. I guess sort of to touch on what we were talking before is, if somebody is maybe not as nice to you in the SEO community, mm-hmm. instead of DMing them or instead of calling them out or quote tweeting them, like, or you're seeing, argumentation happen, DM people and ask how they're doing. Because I think especially in this COVID environment, people are sometimes at their wit's end. They're doing a lot of work. They're doing a lot of work at home and they're doing everything from home. Yep. So instead of calling people out in the community and starting Twitter wars or Slack wars or whatever it is, actually ask people how they're doing, because sometimes they're not doing so great right now. So extend some empathy. I'm trying to do that too. I'm trying to be better about, if I see something, being like, hey man, are you okay? Do you need help in some way? Do you want a listening ear? I think as a community, we can be better if we're extending that empathy to people.
Yeah, literally just asking, hey, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Because there was nothing that really was offensive there. Can I help you out? Buy a cup of coffee, something like that, virtually. All right.
What's going on? Let's work through this.
Yeah. All right. So is it true that you rode a rampaging elephant through the forest in India?
That is true. Yeah. I studied abroad in college and I didn't understand how it worked at the time. I feel really bad about it now, but we bought a ride for an elephant and the elephant was not having it. So it rampaged through a forest. It got a tree with its trunk and tried to like swat us off its back.
Oh, man.
And they had to bring the elephant's girlfriend to like calm him down. And then we walked back and I was like, I am never getting on a large animal again. Oh, and I regret this choice. So please don't come after me, animal rights people. I know it was a bad choice now.
And don't send Carolyn any pictures of elephants.
I, if you want, I can send you the picture of the elephant like trying to stomp on me before we
went. Oh my gosh. Yes, we got to have that. All right. Thank you so much. We want to make sure that we promote SMX Advance coming up June 15th and 16th. We certainly want to be participant of that. So we're going to jump in there, see if we can get a ticket or two. And we may even want to give away one for our audience. How about that?
That sounds great.
Cool. All right. That said, you want to certainly track down Carolyn on Twitter at Carolyn Lyden, LYDEN. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and it's great to be able to meet the new editor-in-chief over at Third Door Media. Keep up the good work over there. All right?
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Don't forget to like and subscribe to The Edge of the Web on YouTube. And if you're really feeling up today, you know what? We'd really like to have you give us a review online. Let us know how we did on this show. show, as well as maybe some of the others. This is how we get our feedback, but also it keeps the algorithm working in our favor. So please give us a review today. Thanks to our sponsor, Site Strategics. Check out all the must-see videos and much more over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Next show, we're going to be talking to Roger Monty, author at Search Engine Journal. We're talking news, people all over the place. So from all of us over at Edge, do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Stay well and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.